hear public testimony on a few new Central City 2035 amendments, and then we're going to deliberate and vote on the amendments that were subject to the public hearing on January 18. Carla, would you mind,
Mayor,
please?
Can I ask
Commissioner Fish?
Just a procedural question.
Yes.
So, and we'll get into this in the course of the hearing, but I can anticipate a situation where on a couple of the amendments, because of the timing of some revisions and because of some outstanding questions by council, there may be a request on a couple to hold them over for a later date. Do we, in fact, have a one last day set aside for voting on whatever has not been? Let me get Dan's mic down. Is there? Do we have a save date for anything that's not resolved?
Yes, we do. We have next Thursday, March 15th at 4 p.m.
And so if anything does fall, not get decided today, it can be continued to next Thursday?
Yes.
Okay. And, Mayor, I just want to foreshadow that there's a couple of amendments, and we'll take them up in the ordinary course, where there's been some last-minute changes. There'll be obviously some questions by council on that. And I hope that if there's a serious issue about wanting more information, I hope that the council will consider postponing one or two if there's a sufficient interest on the council.
I certainly do not have any objections to that. We've gone down a long road on these thus far, and taking a little more time to do it right is absolutely the right thing. So I'll just await people flagging particular amendments that they'd like to hold off on or have further consideration of. So with that, Carla, would you mind reading all of the items for today, 228 through 231, please. Mm-hmm.
228, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan, Volume 2A, Part 3, Environmental and Scenic, amend the Portland Zoning Map and Portland Zoning Codes for Environmental Overlay Zones and Scenic Resource Zones. 229, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan, amend the Comprehensive Plan Map, Transportation System Plan, Willamette Greenway Plan, Willamette River Greenway Inventory, Scenic Resources Protection Plan, Zoning Map and Title 33, repeal and replace prior Central City plans and documents. 230, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan Action Charts, Performance Targets, and Urban Design Diagrams. And 231, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan Green Loop Concept Report.
Very good. So let's start by going over the new amendments. We are going to not do them in order. Commissioner Saltzman is deployed on council business with the Tax Supervisory Commission and will be here shortly. So I'd like to hold off on the view from I-84 till last. So let's start with the upper hall amendment. Mindy, do you want to introduce the next amendment?
Yes. Okay.
What package are we on?
So we are on the new amendments package, and then also handed out to you just today is this new maps piece.
Okay.
This is amendment C and D.
Oops, sorry.
I see.
Okay.
So we're just taking testimony today.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
We will need a motion and second on these.
Okay. It would be helpful if you could explain the amendments first before we solicit a motion and a second.
So this is a new amendment to remove protections for the view of Mount Adams from Southwest Upper Hall and restore existing heights to some of the properties within the view corridor. Southwest Upper Hall offers a view of the Central City skyline, all three area mountains, Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, Mount Hood. This is one of only two places in the Central City where we protect the view of Mount Adams. The view is ranked as one of the best because of its panorama of the city and its diversity. The map in front of you, this map, on your left shows the recommended heights, and the amendment is on the right to remove the view corridor and increase the heights on those properties.
So I would like to just make a couple of comments on this. This view always ranks very, very high, but it is the panorama of the city that leads it to be ranked high. And it is true that Mount Adams is in this view, but I would encourage people to take a look at the view. Mount Adams is about that much of the view. And so for my own part, when I weigh the trade-offs involved in this, there are a number of BLI properties or BLI sites.
BLI.
Building land inventory. Is that correct? Building land
inventory? Buildable lands.
Buildable lands inventory. From my perspective, while I love the entirety of the view, and the entirety of the view is not going to change, the panorama will continue to be protected. There will not be a specific protection for the Mount Adams piece of this view, and I think that trade-off is worthy. So I would like to move it. I don't know if I have a second.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. From there, then, we will move on, unless there's further discussion at the moment on that.
Well, I would just like to point out the council's consideration that the difference we're talking about is not that much, that we're already, there's a difference of maybe 30 feet, 65 feet. It's not that much.
Thanks, Mustafa.
So continue to preserve that view.
Very good. So could we move to the top of Manc?
Yep.
You know, we had a long council session this morning, so if I speak in a language that's indecipherable to you, that's why. Could we please move to top of Manc?
Yes.
Thank you.
This is Amendment E. So on January 18th, you heard testimony on previous amendments related to top of Manc, including the map and the default top of Manc, and later today you'll vote on those. This is a new and separate amendment. This amendment would remove a code subsection and figures that describes how to measure top of Manc where there are structures on the riverbank. By removing the subsection of code, the applicant and BDS would use the new definition to determine on a case-by-case basis how to measure around structures.
And this we're going to take testimony on today? Okay.
Yes.
So I'd like to move this amendment. It's important that the zoning code clearly define the top of Manc, and sometimes it's difficult to identify then under docks or other structures. And since every site that we'll be considering is different, I think it's important that we make the determination based on the individual sites themselves. That means more work, but I think it's also a more precise way of determining top of Manc. I don't know if I have a second.
I have a question, Mayor. I'm not the expert on this subject, but this particular issue is very prominent in our conversations around Superfund, around BES, and frankly, for me to understand this, I would require a pretty significant briefing and understand the trade-offs, because this is a my understanding is this is a departure from our existing policy, so I'm pleased we're taking testimony today and not voting on it today. But I just want to flag that this is a departure, and the bar is going to be pretty high for me as the mayor's partner on Superfund and also as the commissioner in charge of BES to understand the logic behind this amendment.
Okay.
Very good.
So is that a second, Commissioner Fish?
Well, I guess our policy is the second for the purposes of a discussion, so I'll do that for that purpose.
And I would certainly accept that and appreciate that. Commissioner Saltzman is obviously not with us yet. What is your preference? We could either go on to I-84. I sort of hate to do that without Dan. Why don't we move to the minor amendment section, if that's acceptable?
Well, except that this is just to put it on the table, right?
It is. I think Dan may have wanted to comment on this.
Okay.
Is that your understanding?
Yes.
So let's try and drag this out a little bit. And
let's,
if he
minors.
Shows up, great. If he doesn't, we'll just put it on the table.
Okay.
So the minor amendments, let's take a look at them. I don't know if anybody wants to pull any specific item off of the minor amendments package.
M, please, as in mother.
M as in mother is being pulled by Commissioner Fritz. Any others that people would like to pull from the amendments package?
No.
So maybe why don't we do this? Why don't we go ahead and get an explanation of Amendment M and see where we are as to whether or not we want to add that to the overall package or remove it from the overall package.
Sure.
Amendment M is just additional commentary to add to the package to clarify that the Maritime Transportation Security Act allows regulated facilities to have some flexibility in how they design their sites and their security plans to protect the sites to address different threat levels in different ways. So when the city enters into an easement with a property owner for a trail or something like that, that easement can allow reasonable trail closures or limits when necessary to address higher threat levels.
And if I could ask, that's a that allows the Maritime Transportation The Maritime Transportation Safety Administration to make that judgment?
The Maritime Transportation Security Act is an act that was
who gets to make the decision?
The Coast Guard reviews those security plans.
The Coast Guard currently determines when our bridges go up and down, for example. One thing that's different about this, as I understand it, is that MTSA plans are confidential.
They are.
So how do we have recourse if under this there's a significant long-term blockage or impediment to a greenway, and we can't get that, we can't get the relevant information to respond?
I'm not sure we know the answer to that. I mean, we have reached out to a number of municipalities that San Diego, New York, Seattle, and that have trails along the waterfront, and they have not yet experienced a conflict between the MTSA and the zoning code. So I don't know if we have clear guidance on recourse around that, but...
Well, I can tell you that ever since I learned about Marbury versus Madison in law school, I'm quite confident that the feds would have the advantage.
I agree.
And since we are talking about a potentially significant and long-term infringement on greenway access, I think we'd want to clarify what the procedures are so that we don't have some decision made that impacts a greenway for which we have no recourse.
I guess I would have the opposite idea, and that is to not... This is proposed to be added to the commentary. I think that makes it less clear rather than more clear. And since, as you say, Commissioner, the feds have the authority to do what they're going to do anyway, I don't see why we would have it in the commentary of our code. We don't usually reference a state law or federal law in the zoning code.
Well, that's a good point. If the federal government already can claim some authority to do something, why would it be in the commentary? It would appear to be redundant.
We received a request to include this in the code, and we felt that it was inappropriate to have it within the zoning code. We thought that including a reference in the commentary would make it make sure that people are aware of the Maritime Transportation Security Act and that these security plans might be in place that could prevent a trail from being open all the time.
The concern, if I could just be very explicit, the Portland Spirit folks had come in and testified that they had a concern that if we did originally what they wanted was to have it in the zoning code because their concern was the federal government could deny them a permit that they need in order to be able to operate based on their inability to control the walkway. So we have sort of a chicken and egg thing going on here in that I happen to personally believe that you're right, Commissioner Fish. If the federal government comes in and says close the walk for out of the interest of national security, I don't see us standing in their way. On the other hand, we had a constituent come in and testify and ask that we put it into the code. The Bureau then came back with a counterproposal, which was to put it in the form of commentary. So that's how this ended up here.
Well, again, I will come back to this, but, you know, even though we don't control the bridges and the Coast Guard gets to make those decisions, we do have a government-to-government relationship with the Coast Guard, and I think we're able to discourage them from permanently lifting the bridges during rush hour, for example. If an MTSA plan is confidential and there's a national security overlay, I think I just fear that we are potentially putting our oversight at risk and there could be an unintended consequence. I don't know whether there is an unintended consequence, but I'm concerned enough to raise it.
Okay, and it's my understanding commentary doesn't actually need a motion or a second, but I'm hearing a strong request from Commissioner Fish, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Commissioner, to put this in the parking lot for further conversation.
Well, we can take testimony today if someone wants to.
We certainly could. So, and that covers the additional commentary section as well. So my understanding is then nobody needs to pull any of those amendments listed as minor or technical amendments in Section 2. Is that correct? And if that is correct, then I move the minor amendments.
Second.
We have a motion and a second on the new minor and technical amendments in terms of the additional commentary. That'll go into the parking lot. Commissioner Saltzman, we skipped over the view from I-84 in the new amendment section. We wanted you to be here for that conversation.
Great. Thank you, Mayor. I would like to move. We're talking about amendment number one.
Yeah, this is the view of the central city skyline from the I-84 overpass.
Yeah, I would like to move this amendment. I'm satisfied with this alignment. As I understand, it meets both ODOT and PBOT's needs while not impacting private property owners. And I appreciate the work of staff in making that so.
And I'll second this. I think this is a great resolution, and I appreciate moving forward into the design phase with this new viewpoint taken into consideration. I think it's great, and I appreciate the work of the Bureau, and I appreciate Commissioner Saltzman. So that is now on the table. So unless I'm mistaken, I believe we now have public testimony. I should have asked, is there anything else that any commissioners would like to add at this particular point? Are we ready for public testimony? Looks like we're good to go. How many people do we have signed up, Carla?
I show 6 right now.
Very good.
I do just have a question. Is the Salmon Springs View Corridor, that's in the next portion?
That's in the next, next portion.
Carla, these are people who testified on this package of amendments or generally? I think there might be some confusion.
There was a spot to sign up for amendments, but I don't see anything.
Okay, so just to be clear, right now we just need public testimony on the amendments we have just discussed. There will be further opportunities on other amendments later in the program. So just to review, that is the I-84 view amendment. That includes the Upper Hall Street view amendment. That's the one pertaining to Mount Adams. That includes the discussion around Top of Bank. And that includes the minor amendments package that we just discussed. And we would certainly like people's thoughts on the commentary around the Maritime Transportation Security Act allowance of facilities to be closed in the event of a federal closure.
Just one more thing, Mayor. I believe that this will be our last hearing on Central City 2035. So just wanted you to know that. We don't have another one
balloons.
Scheduled.
You always
promise
that.
So to clarify, Sally, you're indicating the mayor had said that there would be opportunities for further testimony and what you generally, and you're clarifying that that's not currently packaged. It's just testimony on the amendments.
That's correct. We are asking that the record be held open until this Friday at noon, but this is the opportunity for oral testimony.
Today.
Yes.
So if you want to, and there's only 6 people signed, so if you want to testify today, come on up when your name's called. Let's just simplify this. We'll sort out the details later. So if you're here to testify, come on up and we'll sort it out.
Okay. So
thank you.
The first 3 are Sherry Solomon, Steve Solomon, and Daniel Solomon.
Come on up. 3 minutes. Name for the record. We don't need your address. And we find out, Sherry, that the microphone's about this far apart is about right, and they slide all over there.
Okay. So let me know how I'm doing, okay?
You're doing great.
Okay. As you know, we live in Goose Hollow. This is about the upper hall. You know, we are adamant supporters of views. And given that, I will start out with one, Daniel will do two, and then Steve will do number three.
Great, thank you.
Okay, good afternoon, Mayor and members of the council. In 1970, the famous architecture critic Ada Louise Huxtable came to Portland, and she didn't like what she saw. Writing in the New York Times, she heaped scorn on the Rose City for accepting a generation of bland corporate, quote, towers and bunkers that spoiled the unique natural and built heritage of our city. She said that Portland had, quote, a better than average assortment of Anywhere USA products, with their interchangeable towers and plazas multiplying a slick, redundant formula in style, scale, and impact. It will be alien corn in every sense of the word, unquote. She also reminded us of
Mayor,
what
I move those words stricken from the record. Just as from the point of view of community pride.
Ignore him.
We've had a long day, sorry. Yeah.
Okay. She also reminded us of what we do have and need to protect, including, quote, small-scaled, comfortably pedestrian streets. This is a dream world utopianism, a city blessed by nature and by man. It is so lovely that Portlanders are lulled into a kind of false security about its urban health, unquote. About the new buildings, she said, no one has stopped looking at the tops of these buildings long enough to see what is happening on the ground. Each one is contributing to a devitalization of our city, unquote. Of the city, meaning our city, of course. 2 years later, Portland adopted the landmark 1972 plan, and the city committed to preserving and building on its walkable urban heritage. Many of those successes came only after long fights by neighborhood activists, such as myself. How ironic that we now seem to be sliding back into the same bland, ugly formulas driven by questionable logic and faulty reasoning and attacks on the same neighborhood activists. For shame. I give Ms. Huxtable the last word from 1970. She said, quote, against the suave schlock of some of Portland's current architectural imports, Mount Hood doesn't stand a chance. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Do I state my name?
Just name for the record's fine. Thank
yes,
you.
Daniel Salomon.
Thank you, Daniel.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the council. Recently, Rachel Monahan of Willamette Week wrote an article framing the current challenge for Portland as a fight between private residents seeking to preserve views from their own buildings and the public interests of all who seek more affordable, equitable housing. With due respect, this point Ms. Monahan is dead wrong. Unfortunately, she repeats many of the lies that are in common currency just now. Let me state several of them. It is a lie that we cannot address the housing shortage and preserve what Portland made a wonderful place to live in the first place. It is a lie that jamming in a few hundred more housing units on top of a tall building in the core will make a significant dent in our regional housing crisis. Whole scale is in the hundreds of thousands. It is a lie that anyone who cares about the iconic views of Mount Hood from Vista Bridge or Salmon Spring, the views that appear on postcards and the TV show Portlandia and many other places, cares only about a private amenity. In fact, this is the most public of amenities. There are assets we all own, part of our public realm, and there's others who are privatizing them and selling off our birthright for a quick buck or a campaign donation. It is a lie that neighborhood associations are opposing diversity and equality, and those who are racing towards demolition of our heritage are angels of virtue. In fact, in my opinion, they are the worst kind of scoundrel. Wrapping themselves in political correctness, they demonize the elderly, the concerned, and the champions of livability, without which Portland is simply not Portland. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mayor and members of the council. I'm Steve Salomon. We are here to talk about the Central City 2035 plan and the need to preserve iconic iconic views. But I would like to talk about the background of where we are and how we got here. We are in a panic to add housing units in order to address the shortage of housing in the region and the growing lack of affordable housing. We do need to add housing units, and there are many good projects to do that. But there are good ways and bad ways to do that. If a surgeon says, I need surgery, that may be true, but it doesn't mean he should use a chainsaw. One of the big fallacies of this time is the idea that tall buildings are required for Portland to get significant density. Someone should inform Paris and Copenhagen then. Those cities are vastly more dense than Portland without tall buildings. On the other hand, Houston and Atlanta do have very tall buildings, yet they're much lower in density. Do we really envy them? A second fallacy is that adding units in tall buildings will help with our affordability crisis. But the units in tall buildings are much more expensive, not only because of the premium views, but the much higher cost of construction. There are people who want you to believe these fallacies because they're going to make much more money in the process. Or perhaps they have unexamined ideologies about density and equity. But members of the council, with respect, your job is to ask hard questions, to learn and grow, and not take these plausible-sounding fallacies at face value. How terrible it would be if we surrender our common heritage, our iconic views, and the quality of our public realm to a privatized regime, and then did not get more affordable housing or better equity, but only an uglier, more divided city. Please consider what a terrible historic mistake that would be. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate all three of you.
Would you like a copy?
Yes, please. If you could give it to Carla, then she'll make sure we all get a copy. Thank you for that.
The last two I show are Aisha Lorenz and Mark Velke.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. I did testify before. I want to make this short and sweet. Please don't withdraw.
I'm sorry. I need your name for the record. I apologize.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Aisha Lorenz, and I'm the secretary for SWRL Southwest Hills Residential League.
Thank you.
Please don't withdraw the view corridor to see Mount Hood from Salmon Springs. Also, the Vista Bridge view is very important to us as residents and voters.
Short and to the point. Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Mark Velke, and I wanted to discuss the views from Southwest Upper Hall. Please do not mess with these views. Let me quote from the packet that I was handed today after getting here. It says, the view was ranked as one of the best views by an expert panel because of its panorama and visual diversity. So, it's not broken. It doesn't need to be fixed. And I was listening when Sally, I'm not sure of her last name, from the BPS rep said that there's only two views like this left. So why would we want to narrow that down to one? You know, there's only two of them left. Let's keep both of them. You may recall the last time I was here, I quoted Spock from the Wrath of Khan. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few. Well, to me, all of these view issues, the many are we, all the citizens of Portland, and the few are the top 1% that can afford to live in the upper floors of all these high-rises and block the views for the other 99% of us. So please, as the current city leadership, keep the views that the city leadership before you have been protecting since 1851. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you.
All right. That concludes then our hearing on the new amendments. The oral record is now closed on those. The written record is going to remain open until Friday, March 9th at noon. And we'll come back on Thursday, March 15th at 4 p.m. to vote on those items. And that will, of course, all be publicly noticed if you didn't catch all of that. I'd like to now move on to deliberations on the amendments in the amendments report. Sally, do you want to introduce this part of the meeting?
Sure.
Okay, so we're here to deliberate and vote on the amendments that were in the amendments report that you heard a hearing on January 18th. It includes this amendments report and this green sheet. This was the subject of the January 18th meeting. So you have in front of you a yellow piece of paper, and this is sort of your guide to the next steps here. So, first of all, we are hoping that, we understand that there are a couple of amendments that commissioners would like to withdraw, so we would do that first, and then there are a few amendments that were in this package that are related to amendments that, that you just heard testimony on. So we were hoping to hold some of those for the March 15th vote, and you'll notice, Commissioner Fish, that we did not. We were going to hold over the top of bank, but we've split that into two now. So there will you could vote on the definition at this meeting and consider these others at a future meeting. So and then the next step is the proposed consent amendment package. And that includes everything else that was part of this package, except the ones I've mentioned, and also except for a list that's on the very back under item 4. So there's a list of 4 topics that we think that council would want to vote on separately, and that's the Morrison Bridgehead, historic height in New Chinatown, Japantown, the view of Vista Bridge, and River Place. So... starting with the withdrawal, amendments for withdrawal, I think would be a good place to start.
Very good. So there's a few amendments that council members would like to withdraw. Commissioner Saltzman, do you have one?
Yes, I'd like to withdraw the Neighborhood Greenway project list, 2B, number 9. This amendment is no longer needed. The two projects can stay in the Transportation Systems Plan project list and can be adopted through the Central City 2035. The neighborhoods agree with this approach and have said that if any refinements are needed, they should be done through the Northwest in Motion planning process, which is kicking off in April of this year.
So Commissioner Saltzman withdraws amendment number 9 within the amendments report, volume 2BTSP. So this wouldn't be a hearing without something controversial to dig into and provide commentary for. As everybody here knows, I asked that the view of Mount Hood and Salmon Springs be discussed, so I brought forward an amendment for the purpose of discussion. I also said at that very first hearing that I was mindful of the fact that the Planning and Sustainability Commission had had hearings on this subject and that they had taken a very difficult and principled vote on that issue. We heard a tremendous amount of testimony on this issue, and I have come to the conclusion that on balance, although it is a close call, I believe it is in the public interest to withdraw this amendment. And the reason I make that case is that while I do love that view, and I want to be very clear about it, I do love that view. There are other views that are protected of Mount Hood. We have just added the Tillicum Crossing recently. There is also a protected view of Mount Hood from both the Vista Bridge and the Rose Garden, and amendments notwithstanding, In one case from the Rose Garden, it is actually expanded. In the case of the Vista Bridge, the worst case scenario is the view corridor will continue to exist from the Vista Bridge. But I want to respect the fact that we heard a tremendous amount of testimony. I agree with the Planning and Sustainability Commission that if you go down to ground level and you put the view corridor in and ask to look like a piece of pie, it actually cuts a wide swath through the Central East Side industrial area where we have significant plans in place for jobs, and it certainly has an impact well beyond that as well. Not insignificantly, there's also some logistical issues. They're sort of the minor part of my argument here, but people have already paid into a local improvement district with the assumption that there would be development in that area. We would have to find a way to refund the payments for that local improvement district should we decide not to go forward with the planning that has been put into place in that particular area. So it is my request that we withdraw this amendment.
May I speak in opposition to your to the withdrawal?
I believe I have the right to withdraw it. However, I believe you also have the right to put it back on the table. Is that correct? I guess I'll look at legal counsel.
Yes. So if you withdraw an amendment that you made or a motion you made, someone can object to that withdrawal, and then it stays on the table.
Ah, okay. Very good. So I hear an objection. Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm going to pass out a memo that Mindy Brooks, CCT, has sent to me. And I was exactly where you just said, verbatim, up until about a month or so ago when Parks Director Mike Abate asked me to take another look at this particular issue. And I thought, and as do you, Mayor, that there are other places where there are views of Mount Hood. What I had not realized is that of all the places where one can currently see Mount Hood from the Greenway and from the Waterfront Park and South Waterfront area, they're all going away. So there are currently 9 view noun places where you can see it, and they're all going away. So if you turn to the second page of these illustrations, and there were some misleading images in the record, which is the other reason I kind of wanted to discuss this, to make sure we have the accurate information in the record. Figure 3 shows, in fact, what will happen if it's built out with the existing height allowances. And then figure 4 shows what the view would be if we, and recommended means my recommendation, height limits, if we did preserve that one view. And it just seems to me that getting to the Rose Garden is challenging, getting to the Vista Bridge is challenging. The place where a lot of people can easily congregate is Waterfront Park. That's the place where people do congregate. And that although there will be the need to pay back some of the, on the third page, Mindy's outlined what would be the economic impact, and it is significant. I'm also always mindful that the Central East Side said that this was a compromise. I just think that on balance, we have compromised too far in the way of allowing development and getting rid of this final view, which if you think about the one place that is the most important view, I think it would probably be the Salmon Street Springs. So I'm now in favor of protecting that view.
Very well. And it's my understanding that I apologize. Pepperoni for me, please.
Multitasking. dealing with future issues. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, great. So it's my understanding, I just want to make sure procedurally I have this correct. So with Commissioner Fritz's objection, the amendment does stay on the table. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so no further action is required at this particular time?
No.
Great. Why, may I just make,
Commissioner
ask
Fish,
one question?
You bet.
If procedurally you need a second to put something on the table, why wouldn't you need a second to remove it? Because then what you're saying is it's now being restored with one vote, and that's inconsistent with how we did the original amendment process. If the objection to the withdrawal is the equivalent of placing it back on the table.
I understand your thinking. My understanding, though, is what the charter requires is a motion and a second to put an amendment on the table. We have interpreted in our office that someone can then withdraw that amendment. And if someone objects to that withdrawal, it remains on the table because technically that second still exists. But are you saying if the second is the same person that's objecting to the motion, then that creates a conflict?
Look, I'm learning as you speak in here. It seems to me that the same rule should apply to overturning a withdrawal motion that you have to meet in the first instance to put the motion on the table, which is it requires two council votes. Otherwise, we're now starting to sound like the United States Senate, where a single vote has more power than a second procedurally. But if that's I'm out of my territory. I haven't done a Central City 2035 before. So if that's the rule, I follow your advice.
That's been my understanding, and we have discussed it in our office about how what would happen when there's an objection. But I can confirm if you'd like to hold off on this and see if a second is needed.
Well, we'll be here for a few more minutes.
I have someone on the line.
We do have this second meeting set, so we could just set it over and get a more considered.
A member of the council. I'm interested in what are the basic rules that apply and how do we apply them. I'm not picking a fight on what your guidance is. It just seems counterintuitive.
Understood. And I had a similar reaction initially. So we will spend a little bit more time thinking about that. My initial assumption is because the charter does not contemplate objections that it's going to come back to what Robert's rule says. But I will confirm.
Okay. So if we can get that figured out before the end of the meeting, that's great. Otherwise, we'll just carry that question over and legal counsel will do their research. Is that acceptable to everybody? Good. Okay, so now let's move on to the minor. Is there anything else anybody would like to withdraw? We'll move on to the minor and technical amendments. This list, minus the amendments we're handling separately, is noted. In the right-hand column is what staff thinks is a consent package. I want to confirm that. Remember that we're referencing the March 7th version of the attachment 2. It's called the Guide to Central City 2035 Council Vote on Amendments. That was distributed earlier today. I'd like to start by asking if any council member would like to remove an item from the minor and technical amendments to discuss individually. If so, now would be the time to request that.
So can I just make sure I have the right document? How many? This one.
This one.
And we're talking about proposed consent amendment package?
Yes, Roman numeral 3. And all of the items that do not have a reference in the right-hand column are included
To a separate vote.
Correct.
And so I have one question off of this. Have we worked out all the... So by being on the consent list, that means that all the issues that we've taken up around eco-roof requirements have been resolved, all the issues around bird-safe window standards have been resolved. So whatever we've heard from either colleagues or the public on that has been resolved for purposes of consent?
That's our understanding.
We believe so.
Okay.
Very good. Are there any items from the minor and technical amendment list that anybody would like to withdraw individually? Hearing none, I move all the minor and technical amendments. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Commissioner Saltzman.
I have a question.
Commissioner Fish.
So I see that you've done a great job giving us the sheet. It just doesn't dovetail with the cheat sheet that Jamie gave me, so I'm just trying to put them together. I had a question on the revised urban design policy for Goose Hollow, which I guess is number 4 on the consent package. And this is just for my own edification. When we add language that says to retain the personality and character of Goose Hollow, are we giving that neighborhood a different designation that we give to other neighborhoods? I think there's probably 95 neighborhoods that would want to say retain the personality and character of my neighborhood. So is that already baked into the code? Is that baked into the proposal? And we're just adding this because it was left out? Or is there something unique about Goose Hollow we're preferencing?
I think in this particular case, Goose Hollow was, they did request the change to the policy, and it does really focus on the preservation and rehabilitation of existing buildings. So the interest here is because within the district we have a number of older and existing buildings they would like to see retained. We felt that it was appropriate to add that information.
So again, I ask this question out of complete ignorance. Does that designation therefore mean that every time we have a land use case, a demolition permit before us, a URM issue or something, that this designation substantively affects the way we have to look at the question?
I mean, it's a policy, so it's guidance, but any building that is a landmark would come to council for a demolition review.
Right.
So this body would have an opportunity to review that. And again, this is policy language that, I think that you may look to, but every situation will be different, I think, depending on the building that is under review.
Okay, I just, Mayor, do you understand where I'm going on this one?
I do.
I think there is a unique personality and character to Goose Hollow. It's a very special place. I want to make sure that we're not, in simply revising an urban design policy, in effect changing the whole way we do a bunch of things that come to us, and saying some of 95 neighborhoods, this has such a unique character and history that we have to, in effect, change the rules that we apply to them in land use proceedings, URM, and other things. And
is it your desire to you can pull that one out?
No, I think the legislative. I'm trying to establish legislative history, and what I'm hearing is it's a policy that we can balance against other policies, but it doesn't fundamentally alter the playing field under which we're going to hear traditional land use matters. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And this is a policy, to be clear. We within our policy document, we do have policies specific to each of our districts. And so this is one of those policies that is specific to the district. And, in fact, we may have others that in the West End and downtown that may be very specific, as is this, to the district.
Mm-hmm. So I want to acknowledge what Commissioner Fish is saying, because I see exactly where he's going with this and what he's suggesting. We're in a dynamic, changing city, and there are many good things about that, but there's also some burdens that have to be shared equitably with regard to those changes. And if I could paraphrase what Commissioner Fish is saying, he's concerned that we're starting to lock our options down on a neighborhood-by-neighborhood basis. And I for one, would not necessarily want to do that. But if I'm hearing you correctly, that's not what you think is happening here.
I don't believe so. And I think, Commissioner Fish, as you, your recent response there, that, we look to our policies and on balance with other policies and what's going on within the district, we would weigh all of those together. And you're meeting multiple objectives and policies within these districts.
Well, I would say, based on this exchange, I'm comfortable with that, with the inclusion of number four.
Very good. And that's already been moved and seconded. So next we'll move to amendments that we're going to discuss one at a time, and those are on the very back, page four.
I think we need to vote on the consent.
Yes, please vote on that.
You want us
package
to actually take the vote. Very good. Please call the roll.
Fritz?
Well, this is one vote, but there's a lot of things in it. Thank you very much for all your work. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The minor and technical amendments are adopted. Next, we're going to look at the amendments to be voted on separately. Those are in Section 4 on page 4 of the yellow sheet. We'll start with Amendment 16, the height at the Morrison Bridgehead. Rachel, could you please provide a brief overview of this particular item?
Certainly. So just to overview, the amendment that is put forward is to maintain the base height of 75 feet at the Morrison Bridgehead and remove the bonus height increase of up to 250 feet for the parcels at the bridgehead. And this is, again, on the west side of the Willamette River. And your picture here on the PowerPoint shows the amendment put forward by Commissioner Fritz to keep the height at base height at 75 feet. And then to the right is the picture with the base height at 75 and the bonus to 250. And the amendment is to remove that bonus height.
Very good, Commissioner Fritz.
Remove the bonus height of 250 and just maintain the height at 75 feet.
Commissioner Fritz, do you have further comments on this?
Yeah, Council in the previous under Mayor Hales voted this change to support the James Beard Market at this location. The James Beard Market is not going to be at this location. The step down to the river is not maintained under the proposed heights here. Although it looks like it is on the right-hand picture, the property behind, which is Bank of America, and we received some testimony from them, their building is not going to be redeveloped before 2035, so that would actually step up to the river if we adopt this change. The 75 is consistent. It's all the way along here is 75. It's got the Skidmore Design Historic District on one side, the Yamhill Historic District on the other side. It's a difficult site to develop anyway, but to suggest that we're going to be able to change all of the on-ramps and allow a huge development here, which is Commissioner Fish in the hearing likened to the one on the other end of the Burnside Bridge, which is really out of place. I believe that this is ill-advised.
Mayor, I have a question I'd like to ask to our chief planner.
Commissioner Fish.
We've had, Commissioner Fritz alluded to the Burnside Bridgehead, and I think a number of us have not been shy about our views about the design elements of the most prominent building in the Burnside Bridgehead on the east side. But that's a separate question from whether we should allow additional height and what's the function of building up a bridgehead. Joe, could you remind me what the Planning Bureau believes is the benefit of having sort of taller, more iconic structures at a bridgehead?
Yes. Specifically, the bridgeheads along the Willamette on the west side of the river, a big part of the intention is to move more active use and development to the waterfront, to take advantage of the waterfront park, help animate the waterfront park. And they also have an urban design place as the gateways into the central city from the east. In terms of as a marker for that, it's an appropriate place for additional height as well. We looked at the impact of additional, and the third one, especially for the Morrison Bridgehead, is these are very difficult sites. So we have a prime location, important for the vitality of Washington, a waterfront park, that's also a really difficult site to develop because of the ramps and the access. So we thought the additional height allows a wider range of design solutions and moves that might lead sooner than later to enough development on the site that could warrant reconfiguration of the ramps that could carry that cost. So that was the original thinking behind this.
So, Joe, Commissioner Fritz makes a good point that there are some buildings that are relatively new in the last 20, 25 years. They'll be around for a while. Their heights are lower than what is proposed under the recommended draft height. I know that in the materials you had suggested, this still responsibly reflects the stepping down to the river by virtue of the fact that the heights along the transit corridor are still much higher than what is at the riverfront. But how would you respond to Commissioner Fritz's concern that in the near term you have a number of buildings that are in fact going to be lower on the west side of this proposed zoning change?
Right. You know, we just in preparation for another presentation, I was looking at properties that were moved or demoed for previous major developments in the central city. So, for instance, the Benson Hotel back when it was first built, and those buildings that we took out there were 20 years old. So the time period, even though much of this looks permanent and lasting. We're planning when we set these heights and these development entitlements for a longer period of time. So, yes, the commissioner is right that this could be, if it got built that way, blocking views of a building that's adjacent to it. But in the long run, the gradient of height that we want up from the waterfront would even allow taller buildings on the building that today is a little bit shorter and would be blocked.
Could you tell me a little bit about activation? You mentioned activating the waterfront, and I think I know what you're referring to. There are more people, more activity, more commerce. But is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about something different?
No, that's exactly it. This is really how the place is used. We're talking about, buildings, so it seems like it's an architectural discussion, but really it's the number of people working, the number of people living next to this great thing that we've built for the benefit of all of our citizens, Waterfront Park. And part of a piece that's been escaping us through all this central city planning over the decades is how to bring more 24-hour regular life throughout the seasons to Waterfront Park. And a big measure of success or big move used in other cities is have more life that's by the park that for whom that's not just going to be their civic space, but their day-to-day respite and place to get out and escape.
Mayor, may I add one other
Commissioner
question?
Commissioner Fish.
Joe, the other, I think, question that comes up here is the question of the aesthetics of a building that's in such a prominent location. Again, I don't want to beat a dead horse about another building and another bridgehead, but if you accept everything that you have put forth about the challenges of building in this site, the gateway component, the activating the riverfront, the creating more mixed uses along the park and other things, which I think are very compelling arguments. How do we also ensure that whatever building is built there is that in a very prominent location is built to the kind of design standards that we'd hope?
Good question, because actually the design, especially the ground plane design, if you're trying, is critical to the success of these buildings. Even though we're talking about tall buildings, and you would think that we're talking about the tops of these buildings, it's the ground plane where people leave and go to Waterfront Park, and that activates that space. The next thing we're doing after the adoption of the Central City 2035 plan is updating what we call the Central City Fundamental Design Guidelines, and that's the place we have a system in place that we're reengineering through one process to try to get work to try to get it to work more efficiently and effectively. Design review is what I'm talking about. And the tool that they use in the Central City is called the Central City Fundamentals, and we're about to update those. And that will be a place where I think we can make the point and draw, special higher standard of expectations or clarity about the level of expectations we have for important sites like this.
So thank you.
Commissioner Fritz?
Commissioner Saltzman has that turn.
Oh, I'm sorry. Commissioner Saltzman?
Oh, well, I guess I just wanted a clarification. Are we voting on this today?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Okay, no, I don't have anything to say.
Commissioner Fritz, you had a comment?
So I have three additional points. One is we heard a lot of testimony from the Central East side, very concerned about the proposal to in any way interfere with access for freight to and from the Central East side. Specifically, the Central City, there's comprehensive plan policies about this, which calls about improving access to and from the district. So I think that that's one factor to be considered in. I think we need truth in zoning on this site, that it's going to be difficult to develop even a small amount. Developing a large amount would be very even more difficult. There's the contract of purchase from Multnomah County that specifies that the bridge has to, they have to have access to the bridge to be able to maintain it. So the diagram that we show of the zoning map is actually quite misleading, because that it's not a single block. It's got the bridge access and everything with it. And finally, we want different areas of the Greenway to have different feels. So we've got South Waterfront, where we've got the very high towers relatively near the Greenway. We're going to have a new district in the River District that we just discussed this morning, which is going to have its own different kinds of field. The feel of Waterfront Park in this particular stretch is of the 75-foot, more historic nature. We've got the firehouse on NATO that's a beautiful thing. It's to put two towers, which would literally stick up like sore thumbs, in the middle of a section which is known for its kind of grassy vista and the feeling that you have approached the river rather than... I think that's the issue. You're talking about a gateway to the city. I'm talking about the feel of at the river. And if we want to make the river the center, then we have to make sure that the land, the buildings...